Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings, I'm Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
And you're listening to the Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight we have a special episode with two great guests, Lionheart and Nick Curto. Lionheart will be the first part of our show, and Nick will be the guest in the second part of the show. Today we will be talking about intrafaith dialoguing, which is something we started recently. We started with Berntus Proxima from the Order of Aries. We continued with Michael Crayhart of Hellenismos Aeonios. And then we went to Chris Aldridge of the Temple of the Greek Gods. And tonight, Lionheart, who is an initiate in the Order of Athena, will be telling us about his personal honoring of the goddess of wisdom, war, and culture. Greetings, Lionheart. We are greatly honored to have you again here on our show.
Greetings and merry meet, Hercules and Athena.
Merry meet. So you are someone who is very closely attuned to Athena, and we'll be exploring your journey a little bit. How did you first hear the call of the goddess?
Well, back a couple of years ago, when I was starting with the Order of the Aurora Coven, when I was to get through my first degree, I was tasked to choose a god and a goddess. For the god, it was very easy. It was going to be the Green Man and most closely Kerenos, because I had worked with him so much. For the goddess, it was a tough call. There was a couple of them I've worked with, but I've always known Athena from time to time, and it came to the decision that I will go with her. And so I did my research of her, and then I also made my proper altar of her as well. And learning about her more and more, I could see how I could relate with her, because especially with the fact that she's the goddess of wisdom, just like myself, I'm always one that can bring out factoids or always research to always find my answer about it.
When I have technical questions or any type of questions about things that Thomas is familiar with, I always ask Lionheart to share with me his wisdom, and he's never failed me.
Well, and the other thing also about her that, like my personality, like with her, is she would always first approach it from a diplomatic standpoint for any situation. Goddesses, like, for example, in the Norse, like Freya. There's like a friend of mine has a cover mate has a shirt of hers that says, "Whatever doesn't kill me, better run." But with Athena, she would go with the diplomatic approach. Of course, with that field, yeah, you better run. And I always have felt that too. I always try to do the diplomatic approach, and then if all fails, then it's like, yeah, now it's gonna really be serious. But that was where I just felt that I could feel that bond with her as well, and especially when I started, and the task for the coven is you spend like 1 month with your god and goddess each. anyway, after you made the altar, and then you start like either eating food for the goddess and are doing meditation with her. And of course, for me, it was having this, like, getting the library bigger with more books and information I find on the internet. And one night, especially, I remember I was sitting on the couch in my living room, and my Athena altar is in the altar room, just like on the other side of the wall from there. I had the lights turned off, and in the corner of my eye, I could see the sandaled feet and the bottom of the robe go walk towards the altar.
Wow.
And I swear that must have been her. Like, she was like saying, "I'm going to become going to my room, Lionheart, if you need me."
So what do you call her like, altar, Lionheart?
Basically, the altar is a simple little table, and I have like a white cloth on it, and then I have this green statue of her where she's holding her spear and she's kind of holding a shield on her head with her hand just on the edge of it. And next to her is a little statue of an owl, because of course she has her owl. And then underneath there, I have a sword and a shield, a round Grecian sword and shield with a lion crest on it. And also on top of the altar on the other side of her is a parchment scroll that I actually read to the coven when I first channeled Athena talking about the story about Prometheus. And I could always provide the link that I uploaded up on YouTube with a podcast for that.
That would be awesome.
And it was different too when I did that too.
Well, I'm sure we're going to visit it through the link. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? That sounds very exciting. What was the message of the tale of Prometheus for your coven?
Well, basically, I decided it was all fair that instead of me telling the story about Prometheus, I thought it would be best to have someone who, at least speaking, was there for it. So I had gotten the proper clothing attire from the costume store, and I challenged her and went out of the room, and I came back as her. And basically then sat and brung the coven and told the story about how Prometheus stole the fire from the gods and told about a couple of different versions of the story. And at first I was nervous about it, but then I could feel her starting to take over. Especially if you know, like one of the verses of the story about Prometheus is that he took a golden fruit and put a note on there that says that to the wonderful goddess of all, and threw it into Mount Olympus. And while all the goddesses were fighting upon the golden fruit, he went to Hephaestus' chamber to steal the fire to give to the mortals.
That is a tale I did not remember, but thank you, because I'm working on something about the golden apple, so that's something I need to research now. I have a personal connection to that story, because where he stole the divine fire from was Lemnos, where Hephaestus had his forge, and he was using the divine fire to make weapons and armor and decorative things for the Olympians. So Prometheus went there and just stole it in a bamboo and gave it to humanity. So my personal connection is there. And, of course, Hercules is the one who freed Prometheus from his punishment.
Oh, yes. And in the video, you'll see that she explains about dear Hercules as well, especially a picture that you even posted once of where, you know, Herc and Athena stand in with. And she said, "Oh, yes, that's right. I have to meet up with him next week."
So, for folks who don't know you, you keep mentioning coven. So, what is your tradition?
I am part of the Order of the Aurora Coven. It is part of what is called the Spiral Tree Tradition. The Order of the Aurora is located in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and we have a couple different sister covens.
And I'm imagining, because you're working with both the Green Man and Athena, that it's eclectic
in its choices
of God and Goddess.
Yes. I mean, you know, we also have some that study the Norse and a couple others as well.
Okay, and that's very good, because the ancients were very syncretic in their understandings. They didn't box things like we tend to do these days. So are there any other people who study the Olympians or who are tuned to the Olympians in the Order of Aurora?
Well, in our children, I know we do have one other that just recently joined, that she's studying Athena as well. And I when she brought it up, I said, "Really, you are?" And she said, "Yeah, every once in a while I do." And I said, that's and that's wonderful. I told her, you know, if she ever needs any insight, she's more than welcome. And she actually got to see my Athena Ultra there this last weekend, and she thought it was beautiful. And then I know there's a coven down in the Twin Cities as well that they are actually a Grecian coven as a whole altogether. And they make respects to all the gods and goddesses. And I actually went to see them for Pagan Pride Day back in 2012. That's also on the podcast YouTube page as well. Very beautiful rituals they do.
So these are Greek Wiccan or Greek Pagan or Greek polytheistic type of traditions?
I believe they are. I think they're Greek Wiccans. Let me see here. I'm just quickly bringing up the information here.
Okay.
The Our Lady of Celestial Fire is the coven. That's what they are. But they're very well done, and they will speak in complete Grecian actually for a lot of times of their rituals and everything. And they
awesome.
And again, they make respects to all the gods and goddesses. It's beautiful.
And where has Athena been leading you? Athena is the patroness of the heroes. So you must have something very heroic in you. How has Athena been sparking that heroic aspect of yourself, Lionheart?
I feel like the best way to describe it is Athena's been kind of like my coach. She has been my means of, you know, saying, don't put this off. Don't hesitate on this. Now's the time to act. If you wait on this, you might lose your chance if there's any sort of opportunities. And especially with working up with the coven and also working with the family and then working out with my good, like, I'm also part of a member of the Lake Agassiz Pagan Meetup, which is headquartered in Fargo, North Dakota. It's a pagan group, actually. And she has been really keeping me going, keeping never to slow down. It's because sometimes I always have had that self-doubt myself, and she has been kind of that get up and go and say, don't give up. She keep on charging at a battle, both in like a knowledge aspect and a courage aspect.
That is very much like her. And recently we had one of our Seven Heavens workshops where we talk about the planetary divinities. And we started with Mercury, or Hermes, as he's known to the Greeks. And during the guided meditation portion, there are some pieces that aren't as guided, which allow the folks who are taking the journey to experience things that are outside the script. And Athena appeared to everybody and pretty much gave the same message, which is very similar to what you just said, to focus on what needs to be done. Don't allow yourself to become distracted, regardless of how distracting the distractions are, and just keep moving forward toward what you need to accomplish. So here, through your voice again, she reinforces that message.
And one thing I will speak of is that, you know, she will be kind, but there's sometimes that she will say, no excuses. I mean, after all, and this was an interesting story I remember watching when I was watching old episodes of Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego, the old cartoon, Sandy Mark cartoon, and there was an episode that brought up about how we came with the scientific name of spider, arachnid, which came from the painter Arcana, I believe her name was.
Weaver.
Yeah, and she was basically wanted to make a painting for Athena, but it didn't turn out so well, and so Athena, upset about that, turned her into a spider.
The version
I've never heard about that story.
She boasted, Arachne boasted that she was better than everybody at weaving. And so Athena, who was the patroness and the inventor of weaving, came and wove. And whereas Athena wove a tapestry of splendor and of heroism and of hope and of conquering spirit and of victory and of triumph, Arachne did kind of like caricatures of the gods, where she took all the more negative aspects of mythology and made kind of like cartoons and mocked the gods. So because she did that with her talent and she was very good, Athena cursed her, made her into a spider, where she would weave forever, but her webs would not attract attention and influence the minds of men.
Yeah, I mean, that was something about that. And And then, of course, then, you know, I know that she, you do see her in the Disney version of Hercules, but
yes,
she, there was some episodes of the animated series that Disney did thereafter that did kind of focus on her as well. She was voiced by the actress that played Daphne on Frasier. And
really?
There was,
I didn't know
that. Yeah, there was one episode especially that I always got a kick out of where that it led to where Zeus wanted to create the Olympics. And it came because, of course, Athens and Sparta were always at war. And one scene especially is where Ares goes to Athena, "You in what naval army?" And she goes, "The Athena naval army, adult." And Zeus says, "All right, the both of you. I didn't raise you both to be acting like a couple 2,000-year-olds.
You bring up another good point.
And then there was like another one where Athena had her watch over her owl and all that. And so there was a couple of good episodes involving her.
One of the points that you bring up, and a lot of our guests who are younger bring up, is that we get our mythology from popular culture. And mm-hmm. in our case, there's the Disney Hercules, the Kevin Sorbo Hercules, the Lou Ferrigno Hercules, the Steve Reeves Hercules. There's a lot of different Hercules shows that came out animated and live action. And for modern people, this is where they get their information about the myths.
Mm-hmm.
And although some people think it's sacrilegious, I don't agree with those people, because even in antiquity, the myths were transmitted by storytellers and playwrights, and the cartoons were on pieces of pottery that were brightly painted. So the myths have always transmitted themselves through the popular culture as well as the religion. And the myths were never consistent. There isn't an orthodoxy with mythology. There were various versions, even as far as Homer and Hesiod. So the fact that we have so many different versions of the myths speaks to the myths' versatility and to their relevance to us who are living thousands of years later, rather than mm-hmm. being a blasphemy or anathema or a mockery of the gods.
Well, it's like, I think like also that you're wanting to do that storyline with the Apollo, the Star Trek universe.
Yes.
And how the fact that all the other different gods and goddesses could still exist in that universe looking for him. And what was interesting is
places too.
Well, what was interesting, the fan series Star Trek Continues, they actually brought they did another episode where they had brought back the actor who played Apollo, and when they were able to transform back, he was with Athena.
Yeah, so you told us about that episode, and we watched it, and I want to thank you for that. That was very enjoyable.
And it's something that even, you know, because you reprised it all years later, and it's something that the person that played Apollo just still was so. And I always thought that if he ever came here to North Dakota, like to one of our conventions and all that, it would be like, I would almost have to be so tempted to channel Athena and have tell brother to stand down. The mortals still remember you.
How does Athena appear to you? How do you experience Athena? Is there any type of theatrical version of her that embodies her best? I remember back in the day when I was a bit more active with the Yahoo fandom and the Hercules Disney movie had come out, a lot of people who are attuned to Hades were experiencing him with flaming blue hair. And
mm-hmm.
Recently on Once Upon a Time, they brought back this Hades, but live action, and he had the flaming blue hair.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was very well done. And in the Hercules Marvel comic, they had the god saying, "Release the Kraken," and mm-hmm. the Kraken had a name, Cetus, but because of the movie Clash of the Titans, the gods now were, you know, calling it the Kraken and saying the line from the movie because it was cool. So I'm sure our popular culture affects Olympus in strange ways as well.
There's so actually another source. There's actually another source too. God of War.
Yes.
Where basically Kratos was tricked by, well, he was either tricked or fooled by Ares that actually where he accidentally killed his family in a war he created, and he started raising his war for the gods, and of course Athena actually was the one that tried to protect Zeus from Kratos and all that. throughout the trilogy that happened.
The Wonder Woman comic book is a very rich source of Greek mythology as well. And some of the writers, like Perez, did a wonderful job with it. And even the New 52, they had a more shamanic take of Greek mythology, a more syncretic and a pan-cultural approach to the Greek gods that was very refreshing, very interesting. They made Diana a daughter of Zeus.
They're actually, by the way, they're celebrating her 75th anniversary, too.
Yes.
That's coming up. And I remember, like, the one version that was actually, there was an old episode of the Super Friends where the Legion of Doom was going to alter history that where Diana does not become Wonder Woman. But we get to see her backstory, where in that version, it's Apalta, her mother, created this, the clay statue, and she made a blessing upon Aphrodite, who appeared and blessed her to life. And then, of course, then she gains all the abilities, like the strength of Hercules and the grace of Apollo.
I have to dig that up. I'm sure I have some Super Friends DVDs somewhere in some box. I'm a big aficionado of the superhero genre, and I've read several books on how this genre are the myths of today, just like science fiction are the myths of tomorrow. So I've studied that for a very long time, and I like the way that the gods appear as themselves and then in infinite variations depending on the comic book company, which has the older versions of the gods and even their older cultural versions in different societies, and then has their own branded version. Like, for instance, the sun god is Superman, and you have Athena, who can be seen as Wonder Woman, and then she's interacting with Athena from the mythology, and then you have a comic book companies crossing over. So these various versions of these archetypal entities who live inside of us and outside of us, and one could argue they're more real than we are because they live a lot longer, and our lives play out their myths. But it's endlessly fascinating. It's always refreshing to talk to somebody who's familiar with them.
Yeah, it was the Challenge of the Super Friends. The episode was called The Secret Origins of the Super Friends, where they try to alter, where the Legion of Doom tries to alter history, where they tell that whole backstory about that. And it was just an interesting kind of version. But yeah, I mean, that was something actually me and a couple of mates actually were talking about, actually, because MeTV actually on Saturday evenings will show the old Linda Carter Wonder Woman. And we were talking about that, how there's like different versions that have altered her backstory and all that. And I'm pretty certain she even knew about Athena just as much.
Did you know that they continued that series in comic book now? It's Wonder Woman 1977. And they're up to their third issue or their third collection. I looked through them. They look faithful to the universe that the television show preserves.
Yeah, because it's own timeline just as much. Yeah.
So what's next? Where is Athena pointing your eyes? You know, in which glorious direction is she urging you to go, aside from participating in other pagan festivals and taking on a more a proactive leadership role?
I think what she's been basically telling me is to try to expand more. And it's something that I know that my fellow pagans has been telling me, especially because I know there's a lot of activity actually me and my group actually did once. And the only thing that a lot of my pagans were telling me for me is to show what more you could do, especially for leadership. And I could just hear it, and I could hear in a sense Athena saying, they got a point. And that's, I think, just what she wants me to do, is to try to go further out of the box, see if I can learn more skills that I do not know of yet, and especially in regards to leadership. And that's where I'm going to try to pursue of it, and especially also learn more that I do not know of. And especially even being a pagan for just over 10 years, I know there's still a more I can learn. Then, you know, that's something that will never end, of course.
Of course.
Even for any experienced pagan. And that's, and that pursuit of knowledge is that she's kind of pushing me forward upon, you know, keep on reading the books, keep on doing my research.
And I will welcome you to join us in our new adventure. We are forming our orders publicly again, and we'll be focusing on the Order of Hercules and the Order of Athena. And we used to have an outer court called the Cave of the Centaur, a.k.a. Chiron's Cave. So we're going to be bringing that back as well, because as everybody knows, the heroes of old used to go to the Cave of the Centaur to find their divine gift and to dedicate it to the world around them and to hook up with their patron deity, and then they would go off on adventure. So we're starting all this again. And in the name of Athena, I invite you to join us if you should wish. And
I would be well enough honored.
Awesome. And we're going to start with a Lionheart page on honoring Athena. And we're going to link to all the wonderful things that you've already done. And as your accomplishments grow, we will grow the page. And this way, anyone wishing to learn more about Athena as you're experiencing her can go to the page and link up to everything. How does that sound?
That sounds wonderful. For anyone that's in the Fargo-Moorhead area, the Lake Agassiz Pagan community is actually this Saturday in Fargo is planning to do a ritual about the fates. And there I will channel Athena, and I will tell to the audience the story about the fates and what they represent.
And since you are recording that, I can't wait to see it. And I'm sure many people who would like to find out more about Greek mythology, Athena and the Fates, and you will want to watch that. So as soon as that's up, please send a link over. And how about folks who want to find out more about the Order of the Aurora? How can they find out more about the Coven?
If you want to find more about the Coven, it's www.spiraltreetradition.com. We got three different covens in North Dakota, one in Fargo, one in Grand Forks, and one in Rugby. And then we have one that's down near Wichita, Kansas.
And it sounds like you're attracting Athenas. So if there are any Athenas out there that are in that part of the country, please look up Lionheart. And Lionheart, how can people contact you personally?
You can contact me personally at tomwaterwitch@live.com, and then I have the Great North Pagan Podcast, which you can look that up on YouTube. Look up Great North Pagan Podcast, and you'll find it there. And there you can find under the episodes, episode number 20 is the episode Prometheus and the Stealing of Fire, and that's where I channeled Athena and told that story.
And thank you for being the first person to interview me when I started a new round of activity. I'm episode number 8. And for those who want an overview of all the things that we've been doing since that time, they're all contained in the masterful interview of Lionheart. So I will direct you there as well. And I want to thank you for everything. And thank you again for being on today's show. We wish you the greatest success in all your adventures and journeys, and I'm greatly honored that you've chosen to adventure with us.
The honor is greatly enough for you, both you and her, Hugh and Athena. I can't express it enough.
And before we go, are there any messages that are coming into your consciousness from Athena to our audience?
Basically, as I'm thinking, look, just calming down and meditating for just a moment. Never give up. Never. The answer will come to you, no matter what it is. Just keep yourself strong and steady. You'll win that battle, and you'll find the answers that you seek.
Thank you so very much. That was very much needed. Be well, my friend.
Be well, dear Herc.
And I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Okay.
That was great. I always love having Lionheart here on the show. Athena, what is our song for today?
Well, for our midpoint musical interlude, we have Beltana Spellsinger with Black Goddess.
Onward to Black Goddess.
Upon a time with International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Greetings, this is Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
And you are listening to Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Part two of our show is called Temenos, which means sacred space in Greek. And we're inviting our good friend Nick Curto, who wears many hats. And today the hat he wears is director of the Urantia Book Group in New York. And today we're going to be exploring the divine entities of the Urantia Book. We're going to be looking at an actual modern-day pantheon. Welcome, Nick.
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules and Athena. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for your kind invitation. Really appreciate it.
And thank you for graciously accepting. You are a very talented individual, and your activities range from art to advocacy to spirituality to awareness of all sorts of fringe things that most people would not otherwise know about. So I'm very glad that we have you on. You're a very knowledgeable individual, and you always have a lot of interesting things to say. You are someone who's taken the initiative and started a Urantia group in New York. I've attended one of the meetings, and I was phenomenally impressed. You want to tell us a little bit about your Urantia group?
Yes, indeed. It's been a big deal for me and my personal life. It certainly affected me. I've been reading it, studying it for a good 25 years and counting. And I originally found it quite by accident. I was raised Catholic. I went to New York City after my graduation from art school in Boston, and I was seeking to find out more about other religions, other faiths. I wanted to know more. I wanted to expand my world. And, of course, New York was a great place to do that. And I went to many different kinds of religious services. They all had something wonderful. They all did. But I was looking for something that would just somehow tap me on the shoulder. And I found myself in the Unitarian Church. And I attended the Unitarian Church, which is near where I live in New York, for about 2 years. And as you know, Unitarian Church reads from a lot of different books, poetry and so forth. So after 2 years, one fine Sunday morning, the minister said, for our last reading of the service, we're going to read from the Urantia book. And I had never heard of it before. It was a strange name to me. I didn't know where it was coming from. But he started reading, and after the first paragraph, I was glued. I was absolutely glued. He read a second paragraph, and then it was time to leave the church, and everybody filed out. And I literally wanted to catch my spiritual breath, because truly, this was something very, very special to me. It spoke to me. And I thought, I've got to remember that name. I've got to trace it. Urantia, Urantia. It turned out that the word Urantia means our planet Earth, and that's the term they use in the book for us here on this planet. So that immediately got my interest, and then I started studying the book, and I went to a study group, a wonderful study group led by Rob and Elaine Jorgensen in Soho. And I was there for 25 years, every Tuesday night, because I was glued. And it was an amazing experience. I learned a great deal. Still have a lot to learn, of course. It's a 2,000-page book, but it spoke to me on so many levels. Science, cutting-edge science, which I'm interested in, religion and spirituality, certainly did, the history of our planet. And it's not the same history that you learned, as we all learned in school. This is a much more expanded version. And also the feeling of what the universe is like, the super universe, as well as our local universe. So that you can't get more expansive than that. So that's what the Urantia book is. It was written, started in 1924 through about the mid-50s, and it was written in Chicago by a man who was in a process something like channeling, although they said it wasn't exactly channeling, and his wife couldn't wake him up, and he started breathing very strangely and started saying things that she said, this my husband would never know these things, never. And she alerted someone who was fairly well known in Chicago at the time, named Dr. William Sadler. And he was, one of the things he was a debunker of anything he felt was false. He also was a doctor, and he had a major group of people, friends, dear friends, who we fell into his home on Sunday afternoons, and they would discuss all kinds of what the world was like, anything of interest. And he eventually, after going to what they call the sleeping subject, this man, Sadler, was convinced that there was something very special going on. And so he told the group, his group, am I hearing chirping? Is there a bird?
Is no, a bird not something? Here.
Okay, I don't know.
Not an orange. It could be Athena's owl. We were honoring Athena in the first half of the episode, so maybe.
She hoots.
Wow, wow. Okay. Anyhow, so what the story is that he alerted to his friends, his dear friends who were scientists, religious people, doctors, lawyers, of this phenomenon that he was looking at and starting to record. And in the sessions, and it lasted for many years, this was an ongoing investigation. And the sleeping subject, when he would go under, would say incredible things that the man would not know any other way. And when he woke up, he really didn't remember what he was saying, nor did he much care, which is a very interesting detail. Because,
yes,
you know, they didn't want all this knowledge to be attributed to this man, because it wasn't really from him, it was through him. And eventually he brought this material little by little to the group in his home that met on Sundays, and they would discuss this, they would have questions. And the questions would then go back to the sleeping subject, and when he was under, he would answer these questions, and they would write it down. And this is going back and forth for many, many years. And interesting to note that the group, which became known as the Contact Commission, was asked not to tell anyone of what was going on, and they didn't. They honored their word that they wouldn't tell anybody about what was going on with this sleeping subject.
And that's why days of old, the mysteries were protected, because people were not allowed to speak of them. There were certain things that could not be shared. And so faithful were people to their word that today we have mostly conjecture. We don't know enough about what actually happened during those mysteries. The topic today is the deities of the Urantia book, because Urantia book has levels of divine beings.
Oh,
and
yes,
that's what I found very fascinating about it. Can you explain how that is portrayed in the Urantia book?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Well, first of all, very importantly, of course, we have at the very top what we would call God. They call it Universal Father. A lot of different names that would be attributed to God, the Father. And from that, here on this planet, we have Jesus, who came here, who was man and divine. Of course, the God, Universal Father, is certainly divine. And one of the things that they said, one of the very first things, is that you, every person on your planet, as well as all the other planets in all the other systems, in all the other galaxies, are divine. You have a speck of the divine Father, of God, in you, in each one of you. That's huge. That's a very, very heavy concept, a wonderful concept. And we have to honor that with our brothers and sisters, which makes perfect sense. So from there, Jesus was teaching that exact fact that you all are divine. You all have wonderful gifts from God the Father, and you have to honor that. The book then goes into the organization of the universe, of the different entities, of the angel orders. It goes into how we are downloaded this kind of information, and how we are lovingly nourished and nurtured and cared for on many, many levels. And so these divine entities are named in the book. And interestingly enough, throughout the book, with all the different chapters, again, were answers to the question that the sleeping subject answered. These different chapters are authored by different divine entities by name. So after you read a chapter, you're going to see who in that makeup, that organization, was able to give us this information, which is very interesting to see. And after you read the book a lot, you realize that these different entities really have different personalities. That starts coming forth, which is very interesting.
Yes, it is.
And they're imparting this information as to who we are, where we're from, where we should be going. And one of the most important concepts is that you have free will, and that is honored, totally honored by God to say that whatever you want, whatever you feel is your destiny, they will honor that. And that also includes progressing on after you leave this planet, after you pass on, that you will at some point graduate, as they call it in the Urantia community, graduate meaning passing on, dying, to another level. And at that point, you're asked if you want to continue. And they're hoping that you will. And they'll try to give you every good reason why you should continue with what they call your universal career. But here's the deal. If you were to say, thank you, but no thanks, I don't want to continue, I want to stop right here, they will honor that.
I've always found that to be the case with channeled entities as well. Some accounts I've read and some accounts I've heard, folks say that their free will, you know, was tampered with or they were coerced. But I've never, in all the time that I've been exploring this, encountered an entity that presented themselves as spiritual and wanted to coerce you and interfere with your free will. So I guess that type of thing speaks to the quality of the information that you're getting. What are some of the names of the beings that spoke and brought forth the Urantia book?
Okay, there were literally many, many, many of them. Let me see if I can get a whole listing for you. Give me one second because I want to get this exactly. Let me see now. Everything, like even in part one, even at the very beginning, the forward deity and divinity, and at the end of part one, and that's the name of it, they identify, let me get to the very bottom of this first section, Orvington Divine Counselor, Chief of the Corps of Super Universe Personalities, assigned to portray on Urantia the truth concerning the paradise deities and the universe of universes. That's how it's signed. That's
and
a mouthful.
It definitely is. What are the paradise deities? What is their sphere?
They give you the overall, the very biggest picture of what's going on, of the organizations, of the different entities and what they're doing. All of these are kind. They are forthcoming. There's occasionally they'll say something like, "We cannot give you that information. We are allowed to give you so much." At some points, I've even read, and this was even surprising to me and others. They say, "We don't know that part of your question. We can only answer what we know." So all these
that's
divine,
interesting,
isn't it? That these divine entities, they know some of it, and they're given permission to give us this information, which is incredibly expansive, limitless love for sure. You feel as though you're being held by the most loving hands in ever. You just feel that love is through this book. But they're saying that there are some things they either do not know or they're not quite allowed to say because perhaps, just perhaps, we're not ready for all of it, which is interesting too. And, you know, that makes total sense. I mean, as much as we know now, we still are infants compared to the knowledge that's in the universe, with other galaxies, with other entities, with other people like us and different than us that were in other galaxies. The Rancho book also says that you have brothers and sisters in millions of inhabited planets. It says some of them are very much like you, and some of them are not like you at all. But we're all brothers and sisters, and we all have God the Father that loves us and watches over us. I mean, it's so expansive. If you're a science fiction, I'll say not because you love science fiction. I certainly do. This goes way beyond anything I've ever read. And this is not science fiction. This is called the fifth epical revelation.
Spiritual information. And coming from my perspective, because, again, as everyone knows by now, I am Greek, we have a lot of this type of activity going on in antiquity as well, especially during the Hellenistic era. So that's the type of stuff that I was raised on and nurtured on, and that's the perspective that I have. So looking at the cosmic spiritualities that exist today, like the Urantia book, I'm seeing something that isn't new. It's something that's been given to humanity many times throughout the millennia. And that reinforces that we're not alone, because in many of the groups that I've interacted with through their speakers, the information presented is not information that hasn't been given before. And to me, that's adds to its veracity, because this activity is ongoing and humanity is not alone. And when humanity can tap into a certain level of mind, they will get this information if they're ready. And
I totally get what you're saying. And certainly there's this information, bits of it and pieces of it have been coming down since man has been walking the planet. And so we've been getting this little by little, and we've been worshiping in different ways, of course, but the fact that we're recognizing a supreme being, no matter what race you are, wherever you are, whatever time you are in, and you're doing this, it's the same thing of there's something much bigger than us, and we're trying to understand it.
And we are very fortunate to have people like you who are able to take this vast corpus of lore and break it down into small digestible bits and put it out there so that folks can sample it, and then hopefully hunger and thirst for it will go seeking it to learn more.
Well, this is a banquet. I'm telling you, as far as hungering and thirst for knowledge and spirituality, truly I can say, personally, this has been a banquet of knowledge, of love, of understanding. I feel like a much stronger person by reading the book. I've been reading the book now. I think I'm on the fifth time I've gone through the book, usually with other people at study groups like the one I have here in New York to study it together. And that's one of the best ways of all. There are many study groups, not only in the United States, but Canada and all over the world. South America has some. Europe has some. Can I say where they can find that, wherever they are?
Of course. Share the information. Open the door. Open the minds.
Well, okay. Well, if they would like to know more, and also if there's a study group near them, they could go to urantiabook.org. O-R-G. So it's urantiabook.org. That will get them to the fellowship site. It's an incredible site. In fact, the whole book is online. You can either read it or you can listen to it. It's been recorded. So if somebody is older and doesn't have a particularly good eyesight or blind or whatever, or just wants to relax in their car, they can hear every paragraph of this book. It's a wonderful way to learn. And so that's all on that website. If they happen to be near Manhattan, I would love them to come to our group, which meets the first and the third Sunday of every single month. And they could. Can I give my email address?
Of course.
All right, because they could reach me, and I could tell them location. It's in mid-Manhattan on West 18th Street off of Fifth Avenue, but I can give them all the details. I won't take up the time now. They could reach me at my email address, and that is NICKNYNY, the number one, in other words, the figure one, at gmail.com, G as in George. So that's NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com, and I can tell them about, you know, exactly the address, and we meet from 1 to 2 o'clock. And after that is the Disclosure Network New York, which is an incredible group that deals with everything that's current in the way of UFO research, abductions, paranormal phenomenon, all that. A lot of people go to both groups. And your rancher group is free. The Disclosure Network is $10. We go from 2 to 4 in the same room as your rancher study group. So just so that they know.
And I've spoken there twice, and I thought very highly of the people who were there. They're all incredible human beings. And, of course, I think highly of you, Nick, and I'm glad that you're coming back in a couple of weeks on November 14th wearing your Disclosure Network hat to debate chemtrails with Athena. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a different type of show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Athena, too. I'm looking forward to that. We're working on, and it will be up and running, a brand-new website dealing with chemtrails. So that's going to be launched in 2 weeks. So just about the time we're having our talk on your program, this will be online, and it's a state of the art of chemtrails.
So we'll have lots of information to explore after the show.
And you might have some of the answers to some of the things I was looking at when I was doing my research as well.
And again, for a final solution to the mystery, we're looking on that episode to introduce the mystery and to look at it from two different directions, just so the mm-hmm. folks become familiar with the terrain and know what types of questions have been popping up and what's been found or what's thought in terms of those questions. So I'm really looking forward to that being the first of many such shows.
Yeah, it's not so much as a debate, but comparing the different viewpoints as to what this phenomena is.
Absolutely. That sounds exciting.
Well, I want to thank you very much. Are there any last words you'd like to offer to our listeners?
I just want to say, again, thank you guys so much for having a program like this. I'm hearing a double. Everything I say is double. It's crazy. I don't know where that came from, but all of a sudden...
It might be an echo within your headphones.
It might be a number of things. This station, it provides an excellent service, but it is a little quirky. I will report what you're saying to the engineer, and I will listen to the show to see if that echo is there. What we found is sometimes what we think we're hearing doesn't always make it to the show, and sometimes it does more so than we had anticipated. So mm-hmm. we'll listen to the show. A recent guest also reported a problem, and that did translate into the show. So we're going to see if we can fix it. But thank you for letting us know about it, because on our end, you're crystal clear.
Oh, well, that's good. And again, many thanks to both of you for such a wonderful show. Really appreciate it.
Okay, joyous journeys, my friend.
Good night, Nick.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Nick is always great to have on. I'm looking forward to his information on chemtrails and then his website. So what is up for us, Athena? What are we doing?
Well, going forward, on October 27th at 7 p.m., you can join Hercules Invictus at the Creskill Public Library in exploring past lives.
We changed the date on that. It's
the
20th. It's okay. Instead of the 27th, that was a last minute thing. But this Thursday, you can come and listen to that. And next week, or the week after, we are celebrating the reaffirming of our wedding vows. And you're all invited to join us. I'll be posting the invitation in various places, so we'd love to have you there. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We wish you all joyous journeys and grand adventures. May the gods watch over you.
for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.